Hey, what's going on, everybody? Happy Thursday. Welcome to another edition of Mean Streets powered by FTN right here on Game Plus Network, live on our FTN Network YouTube page. Chris Meany hanging out with you. Appreciate you guys taking the time to hang out with me as well. I've missed you guys a couple days away from the show. I am battling a massive head cold, but I had to get back at it. Just been sitting down, just wondering what the heck to do with myself. Missed my guy George, missed my guy Quan, missed you guys at Game Plus Network and the viewers here on this show. So back at it here today, a massive week in the NHL. There have been a ton of trades. You know, the trade deadline is usually pretty boring in the NHL. Let's be honest. Over the past few years, it's like a couple of players, big players that are traded and just like lower, low-key moves closer or at like really close to the deadline, day of, minutes leading up, things like that. The NHL trade deadline is tomorrow. I believe it's at 3 Eastern, maybe 4 Eastern. But there have been so many trades over the past 48 hours. It's been really, really entertaining and super fun. And there's still going to be a handful more trades filtering through before the trade deadline does wrap up tomorrow. So on the show, we're going to break down a couple of those trades, what it all means. I got some NHL picks and props for you guys. Of course, 10 games on the slate tonight in the NHL. Dango Batselli already recorded, and you can catch it live. Well, you could catch it live if you wanted to. 10 Eastern on our FTN Network YouTube page on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and of course, coming your way on Game Plus Network as well. So a lot to break down. There's still going to be a lot more to happen. As I mentioned, tomorrow we'll recap everything, what it all means from a Stanley Cup future betting standpoint, but I still think that the value is in the West. You can make a case for a lot of teams in the East. I mean, Boston just a couple hours ago acquired Tyler Bertuzzi from the Detroit Red Wings. They also locked up David Pastrnak. I think it was an 8-year deal, $90 million, 11.25, roughly in around that range. Hometown discount, right? This guy should have gotten 13. He's an elite goal scorer. And that's, if you're a Bruins fan and you're a Lightning fan, you got to feel pretty good about the hometown discounts that you've gotten over the past couple of years. And it makes you competitive. It allows those teams to acquire other players. And that's been my one issue with the Leafs is, Dubas is put into a tough spot. Marner and Matthews right away, like they didn't even really prove themselves in the NHL before they demanded top dollar. And it's really put Toronto in a tough spot. Now, it's easy to do that in Tampa Bay with the state tax and the luxury of playing in Tampa Bay and the warm weather. But like Stamkos and Point and Kucherov and Hedman and Vasilevskiy, these guys would be getting bigger bucks elsewhere. They'd sign team-friendly deals and they're allowed to do other things. Same thing with Boston, Patrice Bergeron. I know he's a little bit older, but certainly a team-friendly deal. Marchand, Charlie McAvoy, and now David Pastrnak as well. But good on Pasta. And he's had one of the best friendly contracts in the NHL over the past couple of years, like just over $6 million. And he is elite. He's probably he's elite. I'm going to say he's the best goal scorer in the NHL. He's right there, with Austin Matthews, and who's having a little bit of a down year putting the puck in the net, but also Connor McDavid, who had another couple goals last night and just inching closer to 60. And I think he'll get to 70, but we got a couple picks and props, which we'll dive into. I got a baseball draft I wanted to show you guys as well, the Great Baseball Invitational. Our guy Justin Mason putting this on for the past few years and, privileged to be part of this. And it is super fun. Always, there's a lot of people participating in this. And I just wanted to show you how my draft is shaken up. Just not so much about my team, just really wanted to show you guys a baseball draft. Now, there's 15 teams, so this is a little bit of a different feel. And it is a rotisserie setting, so you're going to want to attack saves. You need two catchers and things like that. I don't have a closer. We're into round 5 or 6, actually maybe even a little bit deeper than that. And I don't have a catcher and I don't have a closer. So I may be in a bit of a tough spot, but I like the way my team is shaped up. But I wanted to show you guys how the first few rounds have looked in that draft. And we will continue to look into NFBC high stakes leagues. Today, I think we're looking at round 6. We did round 4 and 5 the last time we chatted. So a lot to get to here today, mostly hockey, a little bit of baseball in there. Tyler A in the house. We'll get to that in a second. Welcome in, dude. We've missed you as well. And there's a lot of players taking their thoughts to social media. Like AJ Brown has been very active. He tweeted a picture yesterday going at Juju Smith-Schuster again on Instagram. And then when I woke up, that was deleted. Rashad Bateman took a shot at the Baltimore Ravens organization, almost said Orioles. And that tweet has been deleted since, but I'm going to share what he said as well. And listen, the Ravens haven't done a whole lot to help out Lamar Jackson over the past couple of years. Last year, they had the lowest cap in terms of wide receivers. It was like under $10 million. They don't spend any money on wide receivers. They don't do a great job of drafting wide receivers. I like Bateman as a wideout, but what other wide receiver has Baltimore had that you guys have liked over the past couple of years? Nobody. Like Devin Duvernay had the most catches on that squad heading into last season. Devin Duvernay. Like, they don't have any weapons. It's why Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely, like, people say all the time, oh, you know, Lamar Jackson only likes to throw to tight ends. The Ravens only throw to tight ends. Well, they don't have any wide receivers. And over the last 6 years, they've had five of those 6 years, they've been in the bottom five in terms of cap to the wide receiver room. They don't spend on wide receivers. They're a team that spends on defense. They like to run the rock. And they rely on their defense, and they rely on Justin Tucker to win football games. It's going to be really interesting what happens here over the next little bit when it comes to Lamar Jackson. Is he going to be a Raven? Is he going to be traded at franchise tag? He's not going to play on that franchise tag. I'm pretty sure he's not going to play on that franchise tag. I can't see him. I can't see him doing it. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens with Lamar Jackson if they decide to ante up and pay this guy, or they decide to trade him, because I know there's a lot of teams out there that would like to have Lamar Jackson on their hands. And we'll get to the Rashard Fournette being cut. It's funny about Tampa Bay. They said, I forget who it was. Was it the GM that said last week that Leonard Fournette still had a few years left to be an elite running back? And then like 24 hours later, they cut him. You can never trust what any of these coaches are saying. Daily Handle in the house. Let's go means welcome back in. We're going to take a quick break. Bear with me here today, guys. Hopefully no coughing fits. I know I sound a little nasally, I'd say. Bats. We'll be back after the break. We've got a lot to get to here on Mean Streets. Hang tight. Welcome back. And let's get to this first from Tyler. It says, yo, good morning, Means. Curious your thoughts on Fournette being cut and how it may impact Rashad White. So, I mean, Rashad White is fantastic. There was one or two games last season where Leonard Fournette didn't play or certainly limited. I got his game log up now. I remember it was the game, I believe it was in Germany, right? It was in Germany or London, one of the two. I think it was in Germany between the Bucks and the Seahawks. And Rashad White ran the ball 22 times for 105 yards. He didn't catch any passes in that game, which is pretty rare because he did have a lot of games. I mean, he caught 50 passes this year as a rookie. It's pretty fantastic. Now, a lot of, you know, what Brady didn't have a lot of time in the pocket this year, and there was a lot of just checkdowns, and that's kind of what we've seen from Tom Brady over the past couple seasons, some checkdowns to some running backs. We saw Fournette catch a lot of passes this past season and the year before, and then Rashad White kind of took that role as well. I mean, some massive games here. Five grabs, four, five, six, nine. Nine targets and nine grabs. 45 receiving yards. I think the Tampa Bay will draft a back. It's not going to be just Rashad White. But this is good news for Rashad White. It's great news if you're a White owner in dynasty leagues. But you heard Doug Peterson say yesterday, and I don't know if anybody heard it, but I'll relay what he said. It was a press conference, and he was talking about Travis Etienne, and he was asked a question about what the Jags would do and what kind of workload Travis Etienne would have this coming season if he would be a true bell cow back. And what Doug Peterson said is you got to have two or three backs. I think he even said three or four backs rotating through guys. And I agree with him. You have to keep these running backs fresh and healthy. From a fantasy standpoint, we all want, you know, a running back that's a bell cow running back, but there's only a handful of those guys. There's only a handful of true bell cow running backs, and they all go early in drafts, like Saquon Barkley, Jonathan Taylor, Christian McCaffrey, Austin Eckler. And yes, Eckler is a true bell cow back, but he doesn't get the same type of work on the ground as he does with the other running backs like Taylor, Derrick Henry. We saw uptick career high from him in terms of catches and targets, receiving yards. So he's definitely a true bell cow back. But I think Tampa Bay is going to draft a guy. I don't know if they draft a guy early. There's some mocks out there that have him drafting like Bijan Robinson in the first round. It's possible. I don't think they go that way. There's still some holes in that team, but I would say that it's not just going to be Rashad White. And for Doug Peterson, he's not lying either. I mean, talk about Snoop Connor, like Snoop Connor. I don't know if they draft a running back. Maybe they bring somebody in. I know Jamichael Hasty was still getting sprinkled in towards the end of the season when Travis Etienne came back from the injury. And if you look at Doug Peterson, his track record with the Eagles, when they won the Super Bowl, they rotated through three backs. It was LeGarrette Blount. It was Corey Clement. It was Jay Ajayi. Like, they rotated through three backs. It worked. like kept them all fresh, like 7-8 touches each, you know, not a lot of carries. Didn't know. It was frustrating from a fantasy standpoint. You didn't know who was going to get the rock. You didn't know who was going to get the goal line touches. But I think the Bucks will do something. But man, Rashad White is an absolute baller. I really like him. Clearly, he can catch passes out of the backfield. And he is learning the, I mean, he knows the offense from year two. It's a little bit of a different offense, of course. There's no Brady and Byron Leftwich is no longer there. But right now, it's great. Right now, it's great. If you told me that the Bucs won't sign any, or they won't draft a running back and they just sign like a pass catching running back, I'd feel really good about Rashad White as his upside being an RB1, a low end RB1. Absolutely, right? I mean, we like Kenneth Walker this year. We do like ETN. We like Breece Hall. Breece Hall still got Michael Carter to, you know, battle some touches with and things like that. But, man, Rashad White, if that backfield is his, he's going to be a really good target for people, and he probably won't get drafted as a top 12 back. You know, you can hammer wide receiver early and maybe get Rashad White as your RB1. If you like drafting running backs early, you can potentially get him as your RB2, and away you go. But still got free agency to talk about, and we still have the draft. Quan, I think I asked you this before, but I don't know if you have the running back board when it comes to a free agents. But Tampa Bay could bring in somebody as well. Maybe it's just a Mostert, or I don't know, a Jeff Wilson. I don't think that they're going to be they're actually strapped. They don't have much cap space, and I think that's why they're going with Kyle Trask. They're not going to be in play for a Derek Carr or a Jimmy Garoppolo, so they actually probably won't sign a running back. I can't see them forking out a running back like an Alexander Mattison or anything like that. They're definitely not going to be involved with Tony Pollard, but they're going to draft somebody. You got to have a couple backs, but right now it's pretty good. Rashad Bateman in the news. Our guy George, man, this guy's all over it. In between the commercial break, he made a board of Rashad Bateman's comments. So I want to address them here with you guys, and I'll read this out in just a second, but I want to read exactly what the GM Ravens, Eric DaCosta, said. Quote, Eric DaCosta on problems drafting wide receivers, quote, if I had an answer, that would probably mean I would have some better receivers. We're going to keep swinging. And Rashad Bateman clapped back. And now he recently deleted this tweet, and I think he apologized. I just checked out his Twitter handle. He said he was sorry. I don't know. He says, quote, how about you play to your player's strength and stop pointing the finger at us and number 8, Lamar. Blame the one you let do this. We take heat 24/7 and keep us healthy, care about us, and see what happened. Ain't no promises, though. Tired of y'all lying and cap on players for no reason. It's really tough to read NFL tweets these days from players. The grammar is pathetic. You got to shorten words here so you can get everything in. No shots here at Bateman, but certainly shots fired at Eric DaCosta. And as I said off the top of the show, the Ravens haven't done anything to really surround Lamar Jackson with talent. They just haven't. I like Rashad Bateman as a player. 2 years in the league, he's suffered some injuries. It looked like he was going to have a fantastic season this past year. The first couple games that he had, I think he found the end zone in each of the first two. And it's, you know, they tried with Bateman. They tried. And I don't know if that's is that a shot at Bateman, Eric DaCosta? Right. If I had an answer, they probably mean I would have some better wide receivers. I mean, they've tried to draft some guys, but they've like Miles Boykin. That wasn't a good pick. Devin Duvernay. That's not a good pick. There is a lot. They've tried here and there. They haven't spent high capital on wide receivers, but man, have we seen a lot of NFL players take to social media this year, call out former coaches, GMs, other players. It's been wild, right? AJ Brown again last night. CJ Gardner-Johnson, he called out Jonathan Gannon. He later deleted the tweet. I wonder how that like the Eagles locker room feels about that. You know, Jonathan Gannon had already said that he didn't make any adjustments when it came to the Super Bowl, and defensive coordinator for the Eagles, now head coach for the Arizona Cardinals. He had already said that. He said basically what CJ Gardner-Johnson said when he tweeted that the coach didn't make any adjustments in the second half. Now, that's not the reason the Eagles lost. They couldn't get a stop, but it's not all on Jonathan Gannon. I mean, the players at the end of the day have to make plays on the field. You want Jonathan Gannon to make some adjustments, and he didn't make any adjustments. He couldn't get a stop at all in the second half of that game against Patrick Mahomes. He just got beat by the GOAT. This guy, and he is. Patrick Mahomes is he's the man. And, you know, he carved up an Eagles secondary. They took advantage of, an Eagles team that didn't make any adjustments. But these players that are calling out, like, how do Eagles organization feel about that? How do some of the coaches, how would they feel about that comment? I don't know. It's just, it's a little weird. Gannon didn't make good decisions. He didn't make great decisions. The defense was great all year. Was he the reason that the Eagles almost set a record in terms of sacks? They had four guys, double-digit sacks. No, they didn't blitz enough. They didn't blitz at all. They're not a team that blitz. They don't blitz. I mean, all year, this was a team that could generate pressure with four. He played conservative with his two elite corners that he had in Bradbury and Slay, and they sat back. They didn't give up big plays, but he didn't really make all that that many adjustments. I'm still surprised by the hire, to be honest. Arizona, we'll see how it plays out. A defensive-minded coach with Kyler, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a good thing for Kyler not to be with not so much attention with the head coach. Gannon can do his thing with some defensive plays and things like that, and then, you know, Kyler can work on the side with the offensive coordinator in Arizona. But I still am surprised with the hire. It's only really been in the league for a minute. I know a lot of teams are hiring younger coaches that don't have a ton of experience, you know, taking shots. It's, you know, that's what happens, you know, the turnover. It's nice to see new blood. I'll say that is for head coach. It's not the same rotation of certain guys, but an interesting comments there from Rashad Bateman. Interesting. And he's not, I don't think he's wrong. They don't have a lot of weapons there on the squad. Go get some weapons for Lamar, or maybe trade Lamar. I don't know. We'll take a quick break. We're going to say goodbye to the football talk for now. We got some NHL, some picks and some props. And I do want to dive into some of the trades that we have seen over the past 48 hours or so, that next year on Game Plus Network. Welcome back in Mean Streets here live on our FTN Network YouTube page, coming at you on Game Plus Network. It's been a busy 48 hours or so in the NHL. This trade deadline reminds me a lot of the NBA deadline. The NBA trade deadline is always fantastic. It's great. It's, you know, players are traded left, right, and center. And the NHL trade deadline is usually pretty boring, but we've seen a lot of moves here. I just wanted to, this is from Frank Saravelli of Daily Faceoff, talking about the David Pastrnak deal. I think I had the numbers correct, but I wanted to double check. So it was 8-year, $90 million extension for Pastrnak. It's the sixth largest deal in NHL history in terms of total dollars. Shea Weber, number one at $110 million. Sidney Crosby at $104.4 million. Nathan McKinnon just recently in the offseason signed 100.8. It's like just a fraction higher than McDavid at 100, Eric Carlson at 92, and then David Pastrnak there at 90, and certainly warranted. And then the Boston Bruins just acquired Tyler Bertuzzi, a first and a fourth going to Detroit, and they placed Taylor Hall in long-term injured reserve. So I think that's the reason for the move. Unfortunately, Hall is going to miss a little bit of time. I'm not sure he's going to be ready to go come playoffs. I don't know the extent of the injury. I think he's getting a second opinion. But clearly placed on long-term, and then this deal as well, because it's not like Boston really needed a whole lot. Originally, when I heard the deal, I'm like, holy crap, you're going to have Charlie Coyle and Taylor Hall and Tyler Bertuzzi on the third line? Like, how good is this squad? They're fantastic, but a quick fix, I guess, for Hall. We'll see what happens there. And then Frank Cervelli also saying that the Coyotes picked up Jacob Voracek's contract. Again, just another contract to... I mean, it's been Pavel Datsyuk, Shea Weber, Chris Pronger, now Jacob Voracek to Arizona. And he says the contract, acquiring that contract now gives them ultimate flexibility in the next 24 hours to move core pieces such as Nick Schmaltz or Lawson Crouse as they see fit and not have to worry about the salary cap floor. Because you have to be spending at least a certain amount of money on your players, and Arizona not trying to do that at all over the past couple of years. Listen, I think they've done a good job, you know, trading some of their picks. You know, looking at cap friendly right now, they got two firsts here. They got a second. They got two thirds. Next year, they got a first, four seconds, three thirds. The following year, they got a first, four seconds, and two thirds. So the first three rounds in the next 3 years, I mean, they got like 21 picks. It's pretty good. It's not bad. Jaguars are expected to franchise tag Evan Ingram. Yeah, you know, per Adam Schefter, appreciate that, Daily Hander. What a fantastic season from Evan Ingram. I knew that they would bring him back. Man, the Jags are exciting, right? Evan Ingram had a great year. Nice. They bought low on Evan Ingram, who had some issues with the Giants over the past couple of seasons. You know, some catch issues, staying healthy, things like that. You know, everybody made fun of them, myself included, you know, with the Christian Kirk contract. I didn't really think, you know, he deserved that kind of money, but this is, you know, this is what we see in sports. Like the year after year after year, the money's just going to get higher and higher and higher. Daniel Jones won $45 million. Is Daniel Jones worth $45 million? No, that's probably why they haven't signed him just yet. And it's probably why he fired his agent and he got a new agent. Just more money, more money. Man, if Daniel Jones gets 45, what's Jalen Hurst going to get? What's Joe Burrow going to get? Whew, it's tough. But you got Ingram, you got Christian Kirk, Zay Jones, and then Calvin Ridley is going to be on that squad this year. And Trevor Lawrence took a massive leap forward in year two, I think thanks in part to some of the weapons that he's surrounded by, but also a capable head coach in Doug Peterson, as opposed to the other guy that we won't mention who they had coaching last year. Let's not bring up MLB contracts. That's another one. These MLB contracts, what's Manny Machado get paid? Manny Machado, like, is that guy even going to be playing baseball when he's 41? I don't know, man. These baseball contracts, the 11, 12, 13-year deals, these are what the players want. This is what's happening in the sport of baseball. But is Xander Bogaerts and Manny Machado and Trey Turner, are these guys going to be playing at 41 years old? I don't know. Definitely not going to be elite. Look at Albert Pujols. Great, great finish to his career in St. Louis, but yikes. I mean, that contract is not good. What's the Manny Machado contract is ridiculous. I think it's a bit much. And he's a good player. It doesn't even matter. Can't find it. That's why it doesn't matter, because I can't find it. But at the end of the day, he's not going to live up to that. He's going to have probably three or four more elite years. He's a great fielder. He's a good bat. I don't know how the Padres are going to be in on Shohei Ohtani. How are they going to have that much money? And I mean, apparently they're going to try to get Soto to like re-up on Soto. I mean, Soto and Manny Machado and Xander and Tatis. And then you're going to pay Shohei too. I don't know how they're going to be in on Shohei, but apparently they will. A lot of people that are, you know, a lot more intelligent than me and more in tune in the game, they say that the Padres are going to be front runners to get Shohei. I mean, what a team if they get Shohei with all those other bats. But then in 7 years, we're looking at the Padres. As George told me one time, Xander Bogaerts going to come out in a wheelchair in 7 years, 8 years under that contract, making like $40 million per. Enough of baseball for now. Let's get back to hockey. Let's get back to the NHL. Quan, you want to bring up a list of some of the players that have been traded here over the past 48 hours. Of course, Timo Meier's on the board. We've already really addressed Timo Meier. He didn't make his Devils debut yesterday. The Devils, a big win last night in Mile High against the Avs. But to me, that's the most impactful deal because he's not a rental. He's an RFA. They're going to lock him up. He's an elite goal scorer. He leads the NHL in expected goals at 5.5 per 60. He leads the NHL in shots and shot attempts. He really is an elite goal scorer. Whether he plays with Jack Hughes or he plays with his Swiss countryman, Nico Hischier, it gives the Devils two really solid lines. I would like to see him play with Jack Hughes personally. I think Jack Hughes, I mean, he's been putting up elite numbers. He was on pace for 100 points before the injury. And he really hasn't played with great wingers. Now, Devils fans, stop coming at me. I know I tweeted that and you guys all went at me about Jesper Bratt. Jesper Bratt has played more of his 5-on-5 hockey this season with Nico Hischier. There has been times where Hughes and Jesper Bratt have played together, and I like Jesper Bratt. I think he's a really good winger. But now you just have balance. There were so many times this season where Jack Hughes played with Igor Sharangovich or Eric Halla. Like, let's be real about those two wingers. Now having a potential, not even potential, this guy's an elite goal scorer. Timo Meier next to him. You got Dawson Mercer, who's playing really good hockey, next to Nico Hischier. Devils got two very strong lines to play good 5-on-5 hockey. And then Patrick Kane, who's going to make his debut tonight for the Rangers. Of course, he's going to play with Artemi Panarin in 2015 and 2016. Panarin and Kane played together in Chicago, and all they did was rack up 141 goals and 346 points in those 2 years. Now, I know Kane isn't that same type of player. His second lowest shooting percentage in the NHL. His Corsi 4 is the worst it's ever been. His defensive game is not strong. He's lost a lot of speed. But they just acquired a guy that has nearly 500 goals in the NHL, 3 Stanley Cups, 130 plus points. And you want to talk about showtime? This guy has a game-winning Stanley Cup goal in overtime when they beat the Flyers. He has multiple overtime goals as well. There's a couple moments that stand out to me against the Tampa Bay Lightning in the Stanley Cup Finals. Him and Brad Richards on the 2-on-1 finds the back of the net against the Kings in the Western Conference Finals, Game 6. A 2-on-1 with Jonathan Toews finds the back of the net. Patrick Kane still has it. And I don't want to hear about the analytics. Like, analytics is a nice tool. It's great to have. But for the people that think that this is a bad acquisition because of his defensive numbers, give your head a shake, because they are not acquiring Patrick Kane to play defense. They put him inside the top six next to Panarin, next to Trocheck. You got Vladimir Tarasenko, who scored overtime winner last night, next to Mika Zibanejad and Chris Kreider. It's the best top six in the NHL. It's the best top six in the NHL. It didn't cost really a whole lot to get Patrick Kane. That's it. It didn't cost them really anything to get Patrick Kane. Now, I'm sure the Chicago Blackhawks could have gotten more for Patrick Kane. But, you know, there was only a certain amount of teams that he wanted to go to. The Rangers were high on his list as a New York guy, born in New York. You know, he wanted to go to the Rangers. And if you're the Blackhawks, sure, you probably would have liked to ship him off somewhere else. I'm sure there were better packages, but what Kane has done for the organization, the three cups, not putting him on the map because they're original 16 and they've had some success before, but they went through some really hard times. Oh man, I lived with a guy in Alberta when I worked in the oil patch and the Blackhawks. He would get so excited about the Blackhawks when they won a hockey game because they just never won games. And then they draft Kane first overall in what, 2007? Has it been that long? Yeah, he's been in the league for 17 years. That makes sense, 16 years. And then they get Taves, and then they start to bring in some other pieces, some talent. And they had some really good teams, and they were just up against it, the cap, right? They lost Bufflin for nothing. They've traded Saad. They traded so many players over the past few years because they couldn't fit under the cap. But, man, they got a lot of success and a lot of cups from Kane and Taves. So it's definitely rebuild mode in Chicago. But I just laugh when I hear people with the analytic talk. What are we even talking about here? You got an elite player. He may not be elite. He's not elite anymore, like Timo Meier in terms of goal scoring. But you are acquiring what the Rangers have done over the last month with Vladimir Tarasenko and Patrick Kane. They brought in four Stanley Cups. They brought in a lot of experience. This team was one goal away from beating the Lightning last year and heading to the Stanley Cup Finals. They got a Vezina Trophy winner from last year in Igor Shesterkin, who hasn't played that great this year, but still believe in him. They got a structured team. Let's not dive too much into Patrick Kane's numbers on the worst offensive team in hockey. One of the worst. Only the Blue Jackets since the last 3 years have allowed more shot attempts at 5-5 per 60 than the Chicago Blackhawks. You put him into this environment, you're going to see a giddy up in his step, surrounded by good players, a structured team, good defense, great goaltending. They got it going on, man. It's going to be fantastic to see the Devils and the Rangers in the first round. Other trades that have taken place. One of my favorites as well, Jacob Chychrun of the Ottawa Senators. I love this get by Ottawa. I like Jacob Chychrun a lot. This is a guy that's got a lot of endurance. He plays a lot. He played a lot. He got a lot of ice time in Arizona. This is going to take some pressure off Thomas Chabot, and he's not a rental. And geez, the cost, I mean, first and 2 seconds, it wasn't a whole lot. I think Arizona overplayed their hand. I think this time last year, if they traded him, they could have got a lot more. I see a lot of people talking, oh, you know, Tanner Jeannot cost more than Jacob Chychrun. And I want to tell people to stop it as well. The third, the fourth, and fifth don't mean anything to the Tampa Bay Lightning. That's basically a fourth, fifth, and sixth. It doesn't matter. At least Arizona did get a first. It is protected from the top five, I do believe. But if the Sens come bottom 10, they're going to get a first out of that in a couple seconds. They overplayed their hand, no question. Right? They probably could have got more last year, but let's look at this from an Ottawa Senators standpoint. I really like what Dorion has done with the Sens over the past year, bringing Alex DeBrincat, extending Tim Stützle, extending Brady Tkachuk, extending Josh Norris, bringing in Claude Giroux, and now Jacob Chychrun. The Sens are going to be a really good team in the NHL over the next few years. They're certainly on the rise. I really like the direction of this squad, and I'm super jealous as a Canadiens guy because the Sens are certainly on the rise. Great get. Absolutely. And finally, we can play this guy in fantasy hockey because we've been just stashing him on our bench for like 3.5 weeks because he hasn't been playing because of the trade. Now he's a member of the Sens, and the Sens are making a push. Don't look now, but they're only 5 points back of a playoff spot, and they got some games in hand on a lot of teams. Nice back-to-back win against the Red Wings, made Detroit sellers, as you see Tyler Bertuzzi, Philip Hronek. What are the Canucks doing? This is the most confusing organization in the NHL. What the heck is Vancouver doing? You know, they should have traded JT Miller last year. They could have got a boatload of picks for him and prospects. They decided to extend him. And then they trade a first-round pick for Philip Hronek. These guys should be sellers, not buyers. Stevie Yzerman is one of the best GMs in the NHL. when he calls, hang up the phone because you're going to get fleeced. They sold high on Philip Peronic, who may not even play a game the rest of the season. I know his, I think he's in a sling. I think he hurt himself the other day playing against the Ottawa Senators. But they sold high on Philip Peronic. I don't know what the Canucks are doing. They don't make a lot of sense. I just can't figure them out. The organization just seems so clueless. They're just in the middle all the time. Like, they're buyers, sellers. They just want to get in the playoffs. They can't get in the playoffs. They're just in that spot where they're not bad enough to be like get a top five pick, and they're not good enough to make the playoffs. Oh man, I just don't understand that move at all. Shane Gostisbehere, the Hurricanes. I mean, Carolina love defensemen. They really do. I think they need to do something offensively before tomorrow's deadline. They need to find some offensive firepower. They bought low on Jesse Puljujärvi, who drives offense, but he can't finish. The whole entire Hurricane squad drives offense, but they don't have a lot of goal scorers. But Shane Gostisbehere is going to help with the defense. I still think Brent Burns is going to be a power play number one, and Gostisbehere on power play number two. A really nice addition. Love the Matthias Ekholm addition too. I think he's fantastic. He's had a rough year, but ultimately this guy is exactly what the Oilers needed, getting rid of Tyson Barry and getting a hard-nosed defenseman who plays hard and is hard to play against. I thought he had a really good game last night against the Leafs. I love that addition by the Oilers. I think they should have been in on Jacob Chychrun, maybe spend a little bit more to get Jacob Chychrun as opposed to Ekholm. I think Chychrun would have been a better fit, but Ekholm's a really good fit there as well. Vladislav Gavrikov, and they also got Jonas Korpisalo, for the LA Kings there, trading Jonathan Quinn. I see the noise on Twitter, everyone, oh my goodness, how could you trade Jonathan Quinn? He's a legend. He won you three cups. He won you all these cups. I don't understand how you could do it. This is a business, guys. This is a business. Jonathan Quick's numbers are atrocious. What is LA supposed to do? You're going to send him to the minors? That's a slap in the face right there. You're going to send him to the minors? You can't even send him to the minors. You have to clear waivers. What are you going to do? He's got a goals against average. It's almost four. His save percentage is one of the worst marks in the NHL. It's like 800 over the last 6 weeks. He can't stop a puck. So what are you going to do? You got to improve. Your weakest link is in net. You have to improve. Korpisalo, I think, is better than Copley. Copley is going to start tonight against the Canadiens. I think Korpisalo may take that net in the next 6 weeks heading into the playoffs. You got to do these things. You have to. This is a business. You can't feel bad for Jonathan Quick. He's ticked off. You don't want to go to Columbus. I get it. Who wants to go to Columbus besides Johnny Hockey? Nobody wants to go to Columbus. One of the worst teams in the league. He probably get traded again. He may get traded and be a backup in Vegas or backup in Toronto. He could get moved again. But if you're the Kings, you got to do this. You have to improve. You want to make the playoffs. You want to win a Stanley Cup. You're not going to win one with Jonathan Quick. I'm sure they're going to build a statue. They're going to raise his number to the rafters. They built one from Dustin Brown. You know they're going to build one from Jonathan Quick and Ajay Kopitar, four-goal game the other night. I don't understand it. Like, everyone is just so upset for Jonathan Quick. I can't believe it. We're going to take a quick break because there's more trades I want to get to, but it took me a lot to kind of roll through some of those other ones. So quick break, and we'll be back. We've got some NHL picks and props as well. AS in the house, Meany making money again. Bouncing back, I guess. We'll be back in a couple. Hang tight. Welcome back in. NBA rigged in the house. What's up? What up, Chris? Great seeing you, a gentleman, live stream. A beautiful Thursday to you, sir. That's such a nice comment. I love that. That's why I'm back. That's why I couldn't take another day off. I had to come back for the nice comments like that. Man, I am just hacking in the break. You know, lucky you can't hear it and you can't see it. It's good. Oh, and a question. I love it. Love the questions. How would you compare Pitt versus Buffalo at the current roster going into the playoffs? Great question. The Penguins did acquire Granlund. Did we have that on the board? The other trade? The other trades kind of rapid fire through those as well. I didn't really love the addition of Granlund, but I do understand it. Granlund to the Pens, Nyquist to the Wild. They need some offense. Really, they got Marcus Johansson as well. They really need some offense. And Lars Eller, I think, is a great get down the middle, third line center. Has a lot of pedigree, Stanley Cup experience, won a cup with the Capitals, game-winning goal, actually, to beat Vegas a few years ago when they won the Stanley Cup. So I think we addressed all those moves there on that board. Mikael Granlund, you know, I think that Buffalo has a little bit more firepower offensively, and I know that seems weird because, you know, you got Crosby and you got Malkin and you got Gensel on the Penguins. Both teams really struggle, I think, defensively and to keep the puck out of their net. You know, the Sabres have some games in hand. The Sens have some games in hand. The Pens really need to go on a run. They got a tough matchup tonight against Tampa Bay. I think I like Buffalo's chances to get in the playoffs a little bit more than Pittsburgh. Now, you know, it is Crosby and Letang and Malkin. These guys could flip a switch and turn it up, but neither team really are, they're not getting the goaltending. Like Tristan Jarry hasn't been that great. Casey DeSmith is not that good. And the same thing with Buffalo. I mean, they're rotating through three guys, and it's tough. Both of those teams, I feel like Pittsburgh ultimately, I'm kind of backtracking here a little bit as I walk through this. I think the Sabres have the better shot to get in. I think maybe the tougher team to beat in the playoffs would be the Penguins, just because of the resume that this team has and the experience that they have, you know, with Petrie and Letang on the back end. And then, you know, I think a little bit deeper now with the addition of Granlund, you put him on the third line, but some disappointing seasons from like Brian Rust and Malkin is like hot and cold, and Raquel, same thing. Zucker hasn't impressed me really all that much. The Sabres are probably not there just yet. They got a lot of young talent. Tage Thompson's obviously legit, and they're deep down the middle with Dylan Cousins. And now Tuck is week to week, so he's going to miss a little bit of time. But yeah, I think it's like experience against youth is really the difference between the two teams. And one team that has multiple Stanley Cups and they know how to win when they get there. They know really what it takes, but neither of those teams, I don't think, are going to make any noise. I mean, if they limp in, they're going to have to play Boston in the first round, or maybe Carolina. And I wouldn't take the shot in either of those, but the Sabres are fun. They're exciting. You know, they got a lot of nice young players. They're certainly on the rise, just like the Senators. And I wonder what they'll do. I feel like they're just probably let's stay the course tomorrow. I can't imagine them trading any picks and prospects to win now. If they get in, great. They get in, they get some experience for these younger guys. But I don't think either of those teams are going to make that much noise. They're NBA rigged. How deep can my team, Toronto Maple Leafs, go in the playoffs in the East? What do they need to do to make it to the Stanley Cup? Yeah. Oh man, the East is a bloodbath. It's going to be tough, right? I mean, they haven't won four games in the playoffs since 2004. They've been bounced in the first round in six straight years. I like what they've done. Now, I didn't really address much of it on that board. I only put Eric Gustafson on there, but Ryan O'Reilly is a great get, right? You brought in some leadership. You brought in some experience. The guy's won a Stanley Cup. He's won a Conn Smythe. He's a few years removed from that season, but he's a lot slower. But you're bringing in some leadership, some experience. They certainly got tougher on the blue line with Jake McCabe and Luke Shen. They got tougher. I'm not a big Shen fan. Like he's among the leaders in hits. I think he's a little bit undisciplined. Some penalties there he's going to take. But the defense is a little bit better. I don't really like the Shen addition, but McCabe is a nice addition. Eric Gustafson's a great offensive player. I don't think he's all that good defensively. But this team is a little bit tougher to play against with some experience. But ultimately, I think it's going to come down to goaltending, and I'm not going to give them benefit of doubt against Tampa Bay. I'm just not. They beat them last year. Tampa's got the better goaltending. They got the experience. They've been to the Stanley Cup Finals in three straight years. I thought that they got out-coached last year. I thought Cooper out-coached Sheldon Keefe, and it's tough. It's going to be a coin flip. The East is really tough, and that's why I said that the West, there's your money is probably better spent on like a Stanley Cup future in the West. I think Colorado's still 6-1. The Avs are rolling now. They're starting to get healthy. Landeskog's going to be back, I think, for the playoffs. And Cale Makar, they're winning without Makar. They've won 6 of the last 7. You know, they're getting good goaltending from Georgiev, and McKinnon's just on another level. The path is clear in the West. In the East, if you get by Tampa, you most likely have to play Boston. Then you got to play maybe a Carolina or the Rangers or the Devils. It's just a really, really tough path. I think that they're a strong hockey team. I think that they can play with anybody in the East, but it is going to come down to goaltending. And I wouldn't give advantage Vasilevsky, advantage Linus Ullmark, advantage Igor Shesterkin, probably advantage Samsonov against Vanacek for the Devils, and probably Anderson. So we'll see. Rumors, Vegas going for Jacob Markstrom. Trade would include William Karlsson. Whew. Oh man, I think Jacob Markstrom needs a change of scenery. I mean, we're running out of time to get to certain things, but that's okay. I like this. That's a rumor that, and wow, that would be an interesting trade. William Karlsson's very underwhelming. You know, his first year with Vegas, he had that career year, 40 some odd goals. He had a very high shooting percentage. He was fantastic, right? And chip on his shoulder, maybe, you know, Columbus not protecting him and going to Vegas. And it was all good. Everything was great for him in that first year. And then he signed an extension. He's been very underwhelming. I think he's a better defensive player than he is an offensive player. Jacob Markstrom's better than this. He has to be better than this. I don't understand The Calgary Flames over the last 2 months of the season have allowed the fewest shots at 5-5, the second fewest shot attempts. You saw what they did to the Bruins the other day. They were all over Boston. The shot attempts were like 88-25 heading into overtime. I know Boston was in the second half of a back-to-back, but they really were all over the Bruins, and it was the same result. I mean, I know Calgary, they're a really good 5-5 team. They generate a lot of offense. They drive play. They have a lot of good players. They don't score a ton of goals, but they do have a lot of good players. Their defense is solid. They need a goalie. My one issue with trading Markstrom, and last year he was fantastic. He was a Vezina finalist. He was so good. My one issue with trading Markstrom is then what do you do? Vladar is not the answer. He's not good enough. And it's not no shots at him. He's just not. Markstrom's much better than this. To me, that move I would think that Logan Thompson is not going to come back anytime soon. I think Logan Thompson's fine. I think he's good. That's an interesting trade rumor. I did not hear that one. Thanks for bringing it to my attention. We got to take another break and then we'll get into the NHL picks. And I want to show you guys the baseball draft as well that we're rolling through. Keep the questions coming though. We'll try to get to them here on Mean Streets. We'll be back in a couple. Appreciate the comment earlier from NBA Rigged, but this one here that no one is afraid of Tampa Bay Lightning, I have to strongly disagree with you on that one. This is a team that has been in the Stanley Cup Finals 3 straight years. What do you even mean? Maple Leafs were the better team in that series. I believe Toronto's going deep this year. I mean, listen, all Leaf fans think the same way. It's just another year Stanley Cup parade. They usually, you know, plan it in October when they're off to a good start. I would say that everybody in the league is afraid of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Are you kidding me? Andre Vasilevsky and company, you have to be afraid of the Lightning. The Leafs don't have the killer instinct. The Leafs should have beat Tampa Bay. They should have beat the Habs. They should have beat the Blue Jackets. They should have beat the Bruins. They don't have the killer instinct. When they get to that seventh game, it's it. It's all over. Maybe with some of these guys that they've brought in, maybe they can get that killer instinct, but I strongly disagree. I think the Lightning, a lot of teams are still afraid of the Lightning, and we'll see what happens with the Leafs. For tonight, a couple picks, props, goal scorers, point props. Start with the shot prop. If you have that one, Kwan, we got Rupe Hintz there up near the top of the board. Over 2.5 shots, 4.48 over his last three games. He got a goal in each of those three games. I like Jason Robertson as well. A matchup against the Blackhawks. They've allowed the third most shot attempts and third most shots of 5-5 per 60 over the last month and a half. And as discussed earlier, they've traded a lot of their pieces away. So I do like Rupe Hintz and the Dallas Stars tonight. Brady Tkachuk is just on a mission, man. This guy is fantastic. He has cleared in 5 of his last 8 games, 12 shots in his last 2. This game should be a really good one between the Senators and the New York Rangers. Because of all the trades, right, Mikey Isimont was our guy. We used to attack him because of some of the trades, especially on bad teams, you're going to see average players move up the lineup. Maybe prospects get called and we can find some value on certain guys. Logan Couture is not somebody that I've really talked a lot about this season, but you know, he's going to get 20 minutes. He's playing on that top line. There's no Timo Meier. Mikey Isimont was on that top line. Now a member of the Lightning. Logan Couture is a guy that has 7 shots in his last 2 games. And I do like the spot against the St. Louis Blues who played last night. Josh Anderson has cleared in 7 of his past 8 games. It's a bit of a tougher spot against the LA Kings, but Anderson's getting a lot of opportunity to play in Montreal. Most man games missed, and they're trading some pieces away as well. Tyler Toffoli has cleared 2.5 shots in 17 of his last 18 games. And I talked in the last block about how much offense the Flames generate at 5-5 and the Leafs on the second half of a back-to-back. And I like Adrian Kempe there against the Montreal Canadiens. I think we have another board here with some other plays, some point props in here. Patrick Kane, I do believe, is scoring tonight, but I will take the value on plus 100 for an assist against the Ottawa Senators. Going to play with Artemi Panarin. Old boys back together again. Patrice Bergeron, an assist, plus 155, a matchup against the Buffalo Sabres. I think we could see some offense in this game, so I'm going to take the value there on Patrice Bergeron. Same with Claude Giroux. You know, he's placed on that top line with Brady Tkachuk and Tim Stützle, and he's been fantastic in his last 2 games. I think he's got like 7 points or so, plus 145 for an assist. Anton Lindell on that top line. I don't know if Barkov's going to play. He's a game-time decision. If he doesn't play, he's going to play with Matthew Tkachuk, who's had a fantastic season. I got a minus 120 for a point. I discussed on Mean Streets that he's plus 160 for an apple. Even if Barkov does play, I still like him overall. The Predators have shipped off a lot of players over the past week or so. And I like Florida tonight on the puck line at plus 140. I think that they win on home ice by a couple. And I think he can take some Florida Panther guys there to hit the score sheet. Dadnoff's got 2 points in 2 games. As a member of the Dallas Stars, good spot, as we talked about, against the Chicago Blackhawks. And Dadnoff on that second line, he has a goal and an assist. I think he's got 6 shots in 2 games as well. And I do believe he is plus 200, plus 205 for an apple tonight, but I went with the safer play. An apple is an assist. I went with the safer play for a point. And then Jack Quinn was so good to us the other day. Oh my goodness. We had him plus 400 for a goal. We had him plus 270 for an assist, and we had him plus 145 for a point. Now this is a tougher matchup against the Bruins. The Bruins returned home after, you know, a lengthy road trip, and Buffalo's played Boston pretty good this year, but Jack Quinn, he's playing on that top line with Tage Thompson and Jeff Skinner, plus 136 for a point, plus 280 for an assist, and plus 350 for a goal. I also like Denis Garianoff. We didn't get him the other day at plus 550, but he had six shots. He had a season high six shots, eight attempts, and 17 minutes in his first game with the Canadiens, playing on that top line with Nick Suzuki. He is plus 420 for a goal, and I can't find a shot prop anywhere, or else I would jump on that. We only got one more segment here. I'm just going to show you guys a quick little peek at a 15-team league draft. We'll be back in a couple. Welcome back in. Not a lot of time to dive into this, but we'll just take a look at the first round, Quan, from the Great Baseball Invitational here, taking a look at a 15-team draft. Oh, this is the round six. Okay, do you have the 15-team draft handy that we could maybe get to? Just take a look at the first round. I don't know if you have that one or not. Okay, you may not. We can do... There you go. We'll take a look at just the first round here. So Aaron Judge, first player off the board. This is rotisserie format, 15 teams. Ronald Acuna Jr., pick two. Trey Turner, pick three. Myself, Julio Rodriguez, Jose Ramirez, Kyle Tucker, Jordan Alvarez, Shohei Ohtani. You got to decide. This is like a weekly lock lineup. You got to decide on Monday. Do you want Shohei as a pitcher? Do you want him as a utility bat? Mookie Betts in there. Bobby Witt Jr., Freddie Freeman, Juan Soto, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., say that five times fast. Can't do it. I can't. Bo Bichette, and then Corbin Burns, your first pitcher off the board. Team 15 goes double pitcher, Burns, Cole. Again, we'll dive into this a lot deeper maybe tomorrow, but what I wanted to show you guys is that you get yourself some bats in the first two rounds. Look at the lack of pitchers taken in the first 30 picks. Only five of them, myself, Spencer Strider in there. But you see a lot of value between rounds five and even eight with a lot of pitchers in there. Unfortunately, Joe Musgrove is going to miss, I think, maybe the whole year, close to it, with a fractured toe. He's going to miss a lot of time anyways. But just wanted to show you a little quick peek of some pitchers there that are going. And like I said, we'll dive deeper into it some more and try to seek some value and some targets to get closer to the MLB season. Enjoy all the NHL action tonight, and tomorrow we will recap all of the trades here on Main Street. Have a good one. Cheers.